Don't pay retail for your diamond engagement ring or gift. Come to cleanorigin.com. Founded by a leading family in the diamond industry for more than a century, we're experts in lab-grown diamonds because that's all we do. Clean Origin, the only diamond jewelers who give you a 100-day, no-questions-asked return on your purchase. Head to cleanorigin.com or one of our retail stores and mention code RADIO10 for 10% off your purchase. That's cleanorigin.com, code RADIO10.
Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my side softer?
Can I make my side firmer? Whenever I want?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that. Cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side. 94% of Sleep Number smart sleepers report better sleep. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number 1 in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. To find a store near you, visit sleepnumber.com.
When a drought is depicted on TV or in the movies, you'll see parched farmland with wilted crops and a distressed farmer in denim overlooking it all. But what about drought that resides in the column of air above our heads? What does that look like? Well, there hasn't been a ton of research on that aspect of drought until today. My guest, Craig Ramsayer, is utilizing a new proposed drought index to predict and measure flash droughts in the Caribbean. This aims to trigger policymakers to enact drought mitigation faster and more efficiently. Craig, thank you for joining us on the Weather Geeks podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Well, you know, I ask every guest this question: how'd you become a weather geek?
I was born in Xenia, Ohio, a while ago.
Triggers something already. Yes.
So when I tell other meteorologists that, I can normally end my story, but obviously growing up, about a decade or so after the super outbreak in the Xenia, Ohio tornado, I grew up hearing stories about that tornado and always fascinated by how that entire town really, everything that they did. You walk in the grocery store, even 40 years later, you hear people talking about the Xenia tornado. So that always stuck with me. And my parents and my grandparents, when they talked about the Xenia tornado, you could sort of hear a change in their voice. And it, as a child, as you pay attention to those small nuances, I was just fascinated by what could be so devastating that it would cause this whole town to sort of, change everything that they did, the way that they did things, and the emotional impact that it took on my whole family. So, yeah, it was a love since about probably 3 or 4 years old. My grandma thought something was wrong with me because she would turn on the Disney Channel, and she'd come back in the room and I would have changed it over to the Weather Channel, and she told my mom there may be something wrong with me. So,
yeah, I think that story is so similar for many of us. You know, we hear from several of our guests that some type of weather event or some story related to the weather inspires them to kind of get into this field. It's interesting how sort of influential, the Weather Channel has been to many of our careers as well. So I think you've added to that lore. Let me clear my throat a little bit. Very excited to have Craig on the show. So maybe I'm getting choked up here. He's one of our former students at the University of Georgia with his PhD from us. But let me give you a little bit of Craig's background. He's an assistant professor in the Department of Geography at Virginia Tech since 2019. They have an outstanding atmospheric sciences meteorology program there, and in fact, specializes in climate change impacts, total precipitation, climate downscaling, and climate modeling. He previously was at Salisbury University in Maryland and at the University of Georgia, where he graduated. But of course, I knew that because I just told you that. So really awesome to have Dr. Ramsayer on the show. One of my producers has this question now, and I want to sort of make sure I get it right. Did you experience a hurricane in your lifetime that inspired you in any way, or was it really just the Xenia tornado story?
I think I came back to the discipline as an undergraduate student. My freshman year was Hurricane Katrina.
Yeah.
And I was declared another major at the time at my undergrad at James Madison University. And, I was like that typical high school kid that thought I had to make a lot of money So I was trying to find a major that did that. So I was a freshman and I was new, and there was an opportunity to go on what was called an alternative spring break program during our Thanksgiving break in response to Katrina. And so I signed up. There was a huge wait list, and somehow I got the opportunity to go down there, which I'm super glad I did, because it really sort of seeing the impacts. We were stationed at Biloxi all week. And, you know, it wasn't getting quite the media attention. So I really didn't know what to expect when I got down there. And the devastation I saw obviously was hugely impactful. So I came back, enrolled in a physical geography class because it was the closest thing I could find that maybe doing some hurricane instruction. And so I took physical geography as a response to that and changed my major. And so the rest is sort of history from there. So, yeah, it's kind of a two-step process. As I had sort of an identity crisis as a freshman, not knowing if I needed to make a lot of money or just be happy with what I was doing. So luckily I chose the latter.
Yeah, and shout out, you mentioned Biloxi, Mississippi. I believe the Hurricane Hunters fly out of Biloxi as well, if I'm correct.
I think that's
right. Used to.
Yeah.
Talking with Craig Ramsayer from Virginia Tech. I cued in the intro to this episode talking about flash drought. Now, that may be a new term to many people listening to the podcast or watching it on the Weather Channel streaming app. So let's kind of define flash drought relative to other types of droughts that people may be familiar with.
Sure. So flash drought, really, this concept sort of evolves in response to the needs of stakeholders, where a lot of times, a lot of our traditional drought metrics are really responding to changes in things like soil moisture. And that's a really slow process. So often when you say, you use something like soil moisture as a proxy or a measurement for drought, you're kind of catching drought pretty late in the process, if that makes sense. And so often, farmers, for example, if they want to start to take sort of mitigation steps to maybe decrease the impact of a drought on their crop, they need to sort of be able to sense the beginning of a drought. And more importantly, how quickly are drought conditions evolving is really an important thing to identify. And so that's really kind of, I guess, the concept of flash drought is rapidly evolving drought conditions. And so the next step after that is, well, how do we quantify that? How do we find a way to measure this? And so that's really kind of where the flash drought literature came from. And presently, there's lots of different ways to quantify flash drought in the literature. So we're just using sort of a relatively new way to quantify drought conditions, where and it's a EDDI is sort of the abbreviation, the Evaporative Demand Drought Index. It was developed by a great researcher named Mike Hollins. The idea behind EDDI is to sort of quantify the initial trigger for drought conditions, which is an atmospheric demand for moisture. The idea behind it is if you can quantify that and you can catch initial changes that are happening and how thirsty the atmosphere is, you can kind of get in on the front door of evolving drought conditions instead of trying to wait to measure something that's going to happen pretty long down the chain of events.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
And we are back on the Weather Geeks podcast. I'm Dr. Marshall Shepherd from the University of Georgia and speaking with one of our esteemed alum as well, Dr. Craig Ramsire at Virginia Tech University. By the way, if you're in Virginia, check out their, or anywhere, frankly, check out their atmospheric sciences program. There, I think you call it meteorology there, Department of Meteorology or meteorology program. Really good program. I know it's producing a lot of alum there in the Mid-Atlantic and Northeast and beyond. So I'm glad to see that program prospering. I know some people there. Now, as we're talking about flash drought in the Caribbean, I know the listeners and viewers, some might be thinking, wait a minute, Caribbean tropics, don't they get a ton of rainfall, hurricanes and so forth? So set the stage for why this is relevant in the Caribbean.
Yeah, that's a great question. That's really the question that inspired us to do this was, do these flash droughts even occur in the drought? That was the basic research question that we were trying to tackle with our grant at this particular topic. And so, yeah, I think that's a common issue with the tropics is even before I started drought research in the tropics, I think anytime you talk to even a meteorologist or atmospheric scientist about the tropics, we all immediately think hurricanes and we think heavy precips, humid. And that all is very true. And as I tell my students all the time, drought is not sexy. So I don't think our brains are, you know, conditioned to think about drought as sort of a high impact weather event. And so we started using, again, some of these metrics that have been developed in the mid latitudes for identifying rapid drought onset or flash drought. To really just figure out if it could also detect rapidly evolving drought conditions in a tropical environment. And so, yeah, the thing about the tropics is they need reliable rainfall. They cannot really, the soil systems and the biogeochemical cycles aren't really well adapted to deal with long periods of no rainfall. And by this terminology of long in the tropics is quite different than the mid latitudes. So we're talking maybe 3 or 4 days without rainfall can really start to cause some breakdowns and some really key ecological processes. So they need reliable rainfall day after day. And if you get these brief periods, 4 to 5 days where that shuts down, drought evolves very rapidly, much different than how we would expect it to evolve in the mid latitudes. And so our research shows within 10 days, in the Caribbean, they can go from extremely moist, wet conditions to sort of a full on drought. And so you're talking about a week and a half for stakeholders and, farmers to adapt and prepare, which is really not enough time. And so, yeah, because of the sun angles and the demand from the atmosphere, because of the high temperatures for moisture, these can evolve actually quite rapidly. And we don't need to have like a 30-day break of no rainfall. It can be as short as like 5 to 10 days.
And you mentioned earlier that you're predicting this increase in evaporative demand and using some of the methods. And so your tool or your index is essentially quantifying that increase in demand.
That's correct. Yeah. It's really an index developed off of something called reference evapotranspiration.
Tell us about what EVAP, just let's do a little basic definition for, this is Weather Geeks and we can geek out on the terminology with the best of them, but we probably should at least set the floor a little bit with, when we talk about evapotranspiration, what are you meaning?
Yeah, there? So it's really, as I tell my students all the time, when the atmosphere is really thirsty for moisture, it's going to go find it wherever it can. And so one of the places it can go find moisture is certainly in plant matter and trees and things like that. And so drawing that moisture out of plant matter causes a decay, obviously, in those plants. And so, and it's really a similar process as we talk about in my class. When it gets really dry and cold, right, in the wintertime, and everybody starts to go grab for their lotion and their chapstick and they can't find it, right, that's the atmosphere being thirsty that's not able to access moisture, and so it's going to draw it out of your body. So it's a similar sort of idea, I suppose, but we're trying to quantify how much demand there is in the atmosphere, and if there's lots of demand and it's not being fulfilled, it's going to go start to extract that moisture from things like plant matter and off of water surfaces and things like that.
What are, and again, I am somewhat familiar with your research, but again, where the listeners are not, so some of these questions, kind of be diving into some of the specifics. So are you focusing on a particular part of the tropics or the Caribbean region or Caribbean region, depending on how you say it? Are there places there that you're finding to be more susceptible to flash drought?
Yeah, that's a great question. Our research originally was focused particularly on the U.S. Caribbean. So that would be the U.S. Virgin Islands and Puerto Rico, mostly because of the grant funding we had. That was sort of a priority of ours. However,
who funded this project?
Sure. The NOAA Climate Program Office, their MAP program, which is the Modeling and Analysis Prediction Program. And we were extremely excited to get that funding because getting funding for projects in places like the tropics and the Caribbean has been historically difficult. The tropics are notoriously underfunded in terms of climate and weather research. So that's why it was a priority of ours. And obviously, NOAA was particularly interested in impacts on Puerto Rico, for many reasons that were exposed in recent hurricanes, for example. The infrastructure there is not particularly resilient, and we found that we're working with our stakeholders not particularly resilient to drought, just like it's not resilient to hurricanes. So that was really the focus initially, but the techniques we used made it pretty easy to sort of expand out and try to contextualize whether the things that we were seeing in Puerto Rico were representative of the broader Caribbean. Over even in places like Central America. And so we do find that while this entire sort of Caribbean region, broadly speaking, experiences flash drought, there's sort of pockets within the Caribbean that experience flash drought together. And so we used some machine learning techniques to sort of tease out these different regional patterns of drought and flash drought that can evolve. And so while Puerto Rico and the U.S. Virgin Islands may have similar environments that produces flash drought for them, what's happening over in Central America or sort of parts of South America, there's maybe different forcing mechanisms that could be driving flash drought there. And that's really sort of the next step, is figuring out what's causing these different regional patterns within flash drought. Is it something like El Nino, right? Probably on the western side of the Caribbean, maybe El Nino is sort of one of the more influential drivers. And one of the things we actually start to dive into in this particular paper that we're discussing is the possibility that MJO may have a role in sort of initiating these rapid droughts.
Let me jump in right there, because again, the Madden-Julian oscillation is a part of that alphabet soup that we in the weather and climate world talk about all of the time. I mean, if you like alphabet soup, come into the field of weather and climate, because we've got MJO, ENSO, NAO, La Nina, PDOs, and so forth. So that MJO is just sort of this oscillating sort of system that's moving around the globe in the tropical regions, and it can impact tropical weather processes in many ways. It's a lot more complicated than I just characterized it, but in a nutshell, Greg can add some more to it. But I actually was going to ask you, let me take a break, and when we come back, I want to dig a little bit more into where you were starting to go.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
And we are back on the Weather Geeks podcast. I'm Dr. Marshall Shepard from the University of Georgia, and I'm speaking with Craig Ramsayer from Virginia Tech University, but he's got a little dog blood in him too, so we can get a little sneak a little go dogs in. But I know he's a James Madison fan, and I'm sure a Virginia Tech fan as well. But we were talking about flash drought, and you're talking about sort of, you know, that your next sort of phase in this project or in this research is to sort of look at some of the factors sort of creating this variability in flash drought in the Caribbean and tropics. And you did mention things like El Nino and the MJO. So these are sort of what we call sort of short-term climate variability. There's quite a bit of natural variability, but are there any sort of chances that shifting or changing climate is impacting these processes?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we, in our paper, we show that across the Caribbean, the most flash droughts initiated in the 2010s. So we didn't have enough data to look at the 2020s, for example, but we went from 1980 to 2020. And when we look at that time frame and we split it up by decades, there's a kind of an interesting little increase in the 90s, which we can come back to in just a second, and a part of the Caribbean. But then, yeah, the 2010s, we saw sort of the most flash drought in the Caribbean, which is likely a response to the climate force, background climate forcing, climate change. And we show some other things. The metric that we're using, the thirstiness of the atmosphere, one of the variables in that calculation is air temperature. And so as the background temperature is rising, obviously it's playing a role. And we show that it's statistically significant, increasing these environments of really high demand for evaporation, for dead atmosphere. So in the 90s, that's why we think maybe there's some El Nino role in sort of Central America in terms of flash drought, because we do see a kind of a peak, a secondary peak in the 90s that could be responded to that very high magnitude El Nino in the late 90s. But yeah, we honed in on MJO for one really important reason, in fact, and that's when we saw the temporal evolution, so how quickly this rapid drought sort of onsets in the Caribbean, like we mentioned, like 5 to 10 days, that kind of screened more short-term variability, more sort of the long-term variability. You think about El Nino conditions can take sort of months to evolve, whereas MJO, you can get sort of pretty sudden changes in the tropical atmosphere. And so that's kind of why we started at MJO initially, just because of the sort of the time period that we were sort of seen in our data.
Are there, well, before I ask that question, I want to ask this question. What do you hope this research tells policymakers and stakeholders? I mean, or what would you tell them based on what you know so far?
Yeah, I think those conversations are ongoing with stakeholders in Puerto Rico in particular. There has to be a developing resilience to these rapid changes that are becoming more common, as we show in our data. Investing money in improving the infrastructure in places like the Caribbean that, again, have notoriously been underfunded, lack a lot of resilience in their infrastructure, that's only going to exacerbate in the future as these events become higher magnitude and more frequent. And so, yeah, our conversation is constantly that there needs to be an investment. This is not going to improve anytime soon. And so sort of diagnosing and just making them understand how rapid these droughts can onset, I think, is important for agricultural insurance purposes in the Caribbean, where they just aren't as, there's just not enough research. They know this happens in the mid-latitudes. The rapid drought or flash drought research is over a decade old now. And so making them aware of how rapid changes occur in the tropics, this started a decade ago with my PhD work. It's like, there are a lot of people that didn't know that drought could happen at all in the Caribbean, right? It's just like you had mentioned, very intelligent folks that we were working with. And so now to also show how quickly drought can evolve, I think has been important for making stakeholders and insurance companies aware of really the toll that's been, occurring on farmers in the Caribbean for quite some time. And they've always sort of qualitatively known this to be true, but no one had really been able to quantify it. And that was really, I would say, one of our main motivations was helping these stakeholders that we've engaged with for over a decade down in Puerto Rico to help them be able to quantify what they had been observing for quite some time.
And I would venture to guess, if you're listening to this podcast or watching it on the Weather Channel streaming app, there is some commodity or product that you use that is probably grown in the Caribbean. And so sort of connecting the dots back to the so what factor and as Dr. Remsire nicely described. Now, and then to be clear, I mean, these flash droughts do occur in other places. I think you established that. These are sort of worldwide. So I guess the question is that your research and what you're finding could have relevance in other places around the world, although mechanistically we might be dealing with some different forcings. Is that right? Because the MJO is primarily a tropical feature.
Yeah, correct. And I think, I think another next question is how rapidly these evolve, and maybe the definitions we're using for a flash drought may need to be tweaked, even within the tropics potentially. But the idea of rapid onset drought conditions, yeah, is certainly not sort of relegated to the tropics. And it's really sort of been well diagnosed in the mid latitudes, particularly the continental U.S. So even the U.S. Drought Monitor, you'll see a lot of mentions of flash drought and rapid drought. But again, the rapidity of these conditions may be quite a bit different. And so the tropics, because of how warm and how much demand could develop in the right atmospheric conditions, these happen very quickly. And like I said, the biological and ecological systems aren't quite as well adapted to handle this rapid onset, whereas maybe in the continental U.S. it may have a little bit more ability to adapt. So that's certainly some nuance between each of these regions, but the general concept can hold true probably in any domain.
Yeah. And then the additional, so what, I was sort of very U.S. Mainland centric there, but clearly the impacts to folks in Puerto Rico and part of the Caribbean are sort of a first order significant concern as we think about sort of these flash droughts in those regions. So
absolutely.
I want to also, just as we get ready to wrap up here, I know you do other types of things. What other type of research do you have going on right now?
All kinds of fun stuff. you know, our students keep us really busy. We've got 160 majors right now, so we have all kinds of fun projects.
A lot of majors, Craig.
That's a lot of majors. But yeah, I do a lot of sort of broadly hydroclimatic research. So I've gotten involved with sort of atmospheric rivers or just moisture transport. But I guess a common thread is using machine learning in an explainable way to help address problems. I think that's kind of where my passion is not only using machine learning, right, as a tool, but sort of, I guess, going behind the black box that a lot of people think machine learning is to actually extract out some really meaningful processes that the models are able to determine. So not only predicting something, but understanding why the model is predicting things the way it is. So I always tell students this story. I use something called neural networks, which you can throw any variable you want into a neural network to predict rainfall or temperature or whatever you want. And so to really understand how well my model was understanding the data, I put in variables you'd expect, right? Moisture at different levels of the atmosphere. But I also threw in the proximity of the nearest Burger King. Because if the model was as smart as we thought it was, right, it should weight that input variable to zero.
Yes.
And so sure enough, my model was able to say, you know, the model was able to figure out this Burger King thing has nothing to do with precipitation in Puerto Rico. And so it weighted it to zero. So I like to dabble in all kinds of things related to climate data and machine learning, but apply it to problems, you know, in many different spatial domains.
Yeah, I love that sanity check of these machine learning and AI techniques that are starting to emerge and all of our research. But again, they're artificial intelligent, but they're not as intelligent as the algorithmic input that we can sort of give it to some degree as well. So
right.
I know there's a lot of discussion about that, and I certainly hope to do a future Weather Geeks episode on that as well. But for now, Wow, that went fast. So I knew it was going to be an interesting discussion. It's always good to see you, Craig. Thank you for joining us on the Weather Geeks podcast.
Thanks for having me.
I'm Dr. Marshall Shepherd from the University of Georgia, and we'll see you next time on Weather Geeks.
Spring is in full bloom. Are your finances? With the Chime Secured Credit Builder Visa credit card, you can build credit with everyday purchases and regular on-time payments, all with no annual fees or interest. With Chime's secure credit card, you can start improving your credit scores right away. Get started today at chime.com/build. That's chime.com/build. Chime feels like progress. The Chime Credit Builder Visa credit card is issued by the Bancorp Bank N.A. or Stride Bank N.A. members FDIC. Out-of-network ATM withdrawal and OTC advance fees may apply. Terms and conditions apply. Go to chime.com/disclosures for details.